Hey guys, it's Gigi here. Before we get started, I just wanted to come on really quickly to let you guys know that the Business of Blogging, which is this podcast series that Koi and I are recording, is a two-part series. So this week, you guys will be getting part one, where we mainly talk about finding your edge and what makes you different. And then the next podcast, which will come out next week on January 19th, is more so geared towards monetizing your blog and how to make money and how to break into your industry. So just so that you guys know what to expect, this is not the end and the only podcast, part of the podcast. There is a second part that's going to be coming out soon. So make sure you guys subscribe to the Fashion Analyst Podcast so that you don't miss a thing. All right, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Fashion Analyst Podcast. This is going to be an amazing episode because I have my dear friend, blogger friend, Koi here with me. Listen, I don't know. I feel like Koi, we met like maybe three, four years ago. Am I right?
Yeah, no, I think you might be right there. Maybe longer. It was at a PHL bloggers event or something?
It had to have been. I think it might have been. But for those who don't know, Koi is the founder and creative director behind Gentlemen Within. You can check him out on Instagram, and his website as well is thegentlemanwithin.com. But I'm going to let him, you know, share some things with you guys, introduce himself to you all, just so that you can know how amazing this person is, and you guys can agree with me on it. That's all. So, Koi, the floor is yours.
Wow, thank you so much. You're far too kind. But yeah, thanks first off for having me on the show. I'm definitely glad to be here. Just to quickly introduce myself and Gentlemen Within. So I run Gentlemen Within, and it's an online resource that helps other guys to level up their style and live with more confidence. And we do this through offering practical style tips, advice, and inspiration. For me, the journey started about 5 years ago. I was initially working in the advertising industry as a director. Mm-hmm. And I found out that I was just a pretty terrible employee.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like,
why?
I was laid off over the course of 3 years. I was laid off twice. I don't talk about this often, so not many people even know about it. But
really? Exclusive.
Yeah. And
so why did they lay you off? Was it just too many people, or
I think it was over time. Like, I was starting to get into the style blogging thing over time, and I think a lot of people knew that, like, my heart, I guess, wasn't into the job, and they knew, like, Koi wants to do something else. So
yeah.
I guess might as well, like, give him that push, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But me, like, when I did get laid off that second time, it was like a sign, like, maybe I was meant to do something different, right?
Right.
And like, for me, I've always had like that entrepreneurial spirit, entrepreneurial bug. And mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is like the perfect opportunity. Like, I was really getting into fashion at that time and mm-hmm. learning about different types of styles, what to wear with what, like color theory. So I was really getting into the deep end with this fashion.
Okay.
And so I was like, I want to create something where I can kind of document my style journey along the way. Like, I was having my friends, they would ask me questions about like what they should wear for like a job interview or a date. I was like, maybe I can write a blog post about that and just share it with them. And, you know, maybe other people, I'm sure, have the same questions.
Right.
So it kind of started there.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a passion for writing and design. And so luckily I was able to combine all three. So fashion, style, and design, or mm-hmm. style, design, and writing all in when I started my blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I felt very blessed to be able to combine those three things and over time able to monetize that and actually make a business out of it. And that's something I never imagined before. So I do feel lucky with that. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Being able to do the three things that I'm really passionate about at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned
monetization or monetizing your blog, which I feel is super important. And I feel that a lot of people have questions on that. We're going to get back to that a little bit later because I feel like it is huge. And even I'm ready to take notes because, you know, there's so much that you can learn in the game of monetization. But so I know you said that you realized you were into fashion, you were into writing and all these different components. But what made you feel like you could stand out? Like, what was your edge for that?
Definitely. That's a very good question. So for me, the edge is like something any like great competitor knows, like you need to have an edge in order to like, it gives you that one up on competition. Mm-hmm. Whether like you're trading in the stock market and you want to be a great trader, like you need to have an edge over the rest of the market to, you know, come out.
Right.
And so for me, I believe it's definitely the like a pillar to success as a content creator.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, like my edge was that I knew I was willing to put in the work, and mm-hmm. I was never like the most smart person or the most naturally gifted, but
right,
like I'm not afraid to start from zero,
mm-hmm.
like do whatever it takes to learn like all the things that I don't know.
Right. I feel like that's so important because a lot of people believe that when you start a blog or when you start influencing that the money is just going to roll in. And I get a lot of people who message me like, okay, what do I do next? How do I get this, you know, they may see me post something that I've gotten from like a company and they're like, well, how do I get that? It's like, this isn't something that I just got overnight. You know, this is something that I put years into and companies are now finally starting to notice me because I kind of like separated myself or I, you know, went ahead and sent an email and put myself in front of, you know, others in positions to make decisions or whatever the case may be. So yeah. I think that's like, that's really good. Like hard work definitely still comes along with the job of blogging and influencing and all that jazz.
Right. For example, when I started with blogging, or I really had no idea how lucrative blogging could be as a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no strategy going in. I just wanted to like, post. I just thought I would just post things and people would just magically come and start reading my stuff. But
right.
We know it's like post something and you're going to get crickets. Maybe like your mom or like your family members are on your email list. But
literally, you're like preaching to the choir.
Yeah. But like it's early on, it's like you need to just develop that strategy. And so I started delving into like, how do I set up a WordPress page, right?
Mm-hmm.
And start the blog. And then from there, it was like, I got into YouTube. It was like trying to teach myself video editing. So I would go on YouTube and watch tutorials about Final Cut Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And moving on from there, it's like with the blog, I need to know all about search engine optimization and how can I rank for specific keywords to be competitive with all the other, you know, hundreds of blogs out there so that I can rank highly in Google. You know, Google's always changing their algorithms and they recently had a Core Web Vitals update where they ding websites with like a poor user experience. So if your website's really slow, then they might not rank you as highly in the search. So there's just all so many little things that you need to know when you're just starting out. And so I feel like in order to get an edge, like you really need to buckle down and kind of learn the things you know.
Absolutely. No, for sure. Like this is definitely an industry where you have to research to learn what you need to learn and so that you can do what you want to do, literally. But another thing that kind of like stands out too, with when it comes to people asking about how to start a blog or how to begin having a social media presence is what makes them different from other people, you know? What makes you not the same as another person? You know, because at the end of the day, no one wants to work with a copy of another person. So for you, creating the gentleman or gentleman within, I should say, How did you learn what made you different from other people? What made you kind of like apart from them?
Definitely. Yeah, that's a great question as well. I think differentiation is huge, especially with what we're doing. Like as they say, like the riches are in the niches, right? If you can really get really specific, right? That's mm-hmm. how you kind of can stand out. That's how you're ultimately going to stand out.
That's right.
And so for me, it was like I really needed to. It was a long journey for me. To kind of figure out like what it was that actually differentiated me from all the other guys doing the same thing I'm doing. You know, sharing clothes to myself or writing articles about how to sell different articles of clothing. But I think I found it out. And what differentiates me is that I'm Asian American in an industry that's dominated by white males.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. And I'm on the shorter side. I'm standing 5'6" in sneakers. So,
you know what? I can't even hit on that because I'm 5'1" in sneakers. So,
okay.
You know, you're much taller than I am. So,
yeah, I'm definitely under the average height of average male height in America.
What is the average male height?
I believe it is 5'10".
Really?
In the U.S.? 5'9", 5'10".
Wow. Okay. I didn't
Definitely.
Know that.
5'10" is like considered short these days, you know.
Is it?
Yeah. There's actually a brand called Under 5'10", and it's
It's
clothing that's catered specifically towards shorter guys. Like that's their messaging and their branding.
Wow. I mean, it's
clothes for shorter men.
But I get it. Wow. Oh, okay. I mean, if you're not 5'1", I feel like you're a giant compared to me. So,
yeah,
you know, but okay, so that's awesome. So, okay, so those couple of things were, you know, your height and you being Asian American definitely set you apart. Is there anything else that kind of like separated you?
Yeah, so like that's something that I've really begun to embrace. Mm-hmm. I think people who follow me on YouTube, they relate to my videos because I'm shorter and I'm Asian. And so I have an Asian audience and, you know, Southeast Asians and shorter guys following me. And it's just a really niche audience. And at the same time, the content that I create still has that broad appeal. And so it's going to apply to any guy who's looking to dress better and level up his style.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you have like a specific place that you order your clothing from, or, you know, do you have, I don't know. I can't talk. Okay. Quick story. I got my braces off like 2 days ago and it's very weird talking without them. So please.
I didn't notice. So. I think you're fine.
Okay. But are there stores that you kind of like gravitate towards or?
Definitely. I do have go-tos for sure. It's kind of evolved over time though. When I was starting out, it was like, well, early on in my style journey was like Express and like The Gap and like just big mall brands. But then I realized that they didn't really have the clothing that was geared towards me. I actually do make clothing for shorter guys nowadays, but
they do
actually. Wow. Some of the like shirts are still too long, but they do offer jeans and pants and joggers with like shorter inseams now. So fit me quite well actually, and I've been lucky enough to work with them on like partnership basis in the past. But some of the brands that I do enjoy are like the one I just mentioned, Under 5'10", brands that bring towards shorter guys specifically because the clothing just fits me perfectly off the rack. So there's brand Peter Manning NYC, they're based in New York City, and there's another one called Ash and Erie. They were on Short Tank a few years ago.
Okay.
And they also offer clothing for short guys, and that those have been like some go-tos for me. And then of course there's like the Uniqlo's of the world. And like even ASOS, like fast fashion, sometimes even though I'm not like huge on fast fashion, but I do believe that for guys who want to experiment with certain styles, you know, just go out and get something that might be a little cheaper just to see if you might like it.
Right. That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. I mean, you mentioned ASOS and I have a love-hate relationship with them. Just simply because they, I don't know, I feel like they cater to a specific, like they think like if you're a size 10, everything should be a size 10. I don't know if that makes sense, but when it comes to like women's fashion, it's so many different like moving parts. Like I can't shop in plus size because the arms or the bust might be too big, but then the waist will fit me perfectly. It's just ASOS, I feel, just, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to get too deep into that. This is not...
I hear you. I do hear you.
Yeah, this is not like a company shaming thing, but you know, it's just hard finding your perfect company because they encompass every single thing that you need when it comes to your body, you know? So the fact that you have multiple, a plethora of companies that you kind of rely on and gravitate to in order to purchase the things that you need, the quality products that you need, is like a beautiful thing to me. I envy you for that. I'm still on the search.
Yeah. So I think a lot of brands are doing a good job with adapting to the trends as well. And kind of the more athleisure style or like work leisure style ever since COVID happened. And so they're definitely more on point with that type of clothing. And then also trying to be more inclusive with the different body types, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Like ASOS does have like, at least for men, I haven't really seen, or I don't know too much about the women's side of things, but
right.
The men's side, they do have like plus sizes, like for even like more heftier guys. And even in the models that they show are like bigger guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way from like skinny, super skinny styles as well. And so I think they do a good job with that, but they're just, you know, they're manufacturing. I'm sure it's like they can cater to any size just because of your size of their manufacturing.
For sure. And then also, worst case scenario, there are tailors. There's tailors that help get things, get measurements exactly to how you like them. So if you really like a company and their brand and how they produce clothes and things like that, if it doesn't fit you perfectly, that's one of my go-tos. I just go to a tailor and they'll just, you know, nit-tuck anything that is too much or too little.
Absolutely. You're on point with that. It's all about the fit is the most important thing. And the tailor knows how to help you achieve that for sure.
That is correct. Okay, so we've talked about what your edge was. We talked about what made you different, which are both amazing topics. But I also want to talk about a little bit your authenticity. How important is it to be real? Because, you know, we live in an age of social media. And I don't know if you listen to Kevin Gates, who is a rapper that my husband and I absolutely love. But... he was just recently on an interview and he was talking about how he took a 6-month break hiatus from social media because he had this mindset where he would see people winning and accomplishing goals and doing amazing things. And he was looking at himself and he was like, well, I'm not doing the same thing and I'm in the same industry. And then he just kind of boiled it down to Instagram is a highlight reel. Instagram is the place where people highlight where they, you know, have reached a goal or they're highlighting a good moment in their life. And, you know, a lot of times it discourages people who wish to pursue a social media personality, persona, lifestyle situation. So as a person who is very successful, I consider you very successful in what you do. So as a person who is very successful in what they do, how do you maintain your authenticity in this industry?
Yeah, absolutely. You haven't heard of Kevin Gates, but the situation that he was in, like taking the 6 months off, I think that's, I mean, sometimes we just need that social media detox and do whatever is best for us. And, you know, we don't know what other people are going through. And like you said, it's all a highlight reel. Like we're just posting all the good things.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely does discourage people when they see those things, and it's like they don't, I don't compare, or you know, it's all a comparison game, I feel like, when it comes down to it. But for me, authenticity begins with just doing things like the right way. So it's like something I noticed a lot of Instagrammers especially, that they would be into, and I'm sure like anyone who's in our space knows about these things. So, you know, things like buying followers, that's self-explanatory. Ultimately, that's like a recipe for disaster. And there's the engagement pods, right?
Where
people would go like the Telegram groups, or and it'd be like a influencers from niches, from like niches, from fashion to travel, and just all different industries, and they would post, and then everyone would like and comment and then save. And for me, it's like that type of engagement like skews all the data, right?
It does.
You're providing data to brands, like that's not fair to the brand. I feel like brands who are more savvy kind of can see through all of that as well.
Yeah.
I feel like that to me was something that will definitely hurt over time. Like it might be like an instant gratification type of thing.
For sure.
Ultimately, it's going to hurt your authenticity in the end. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, as a blogger, there's lots of paid sponsorships as you start to grow and get bigger.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's imperative not to partner with brands that you don't actually use or that you wouldn't use yourself. Because then, like, you know, the audience is just going to see right through that.
That's true.
That's another one. And these things are like really kind of self-explanatory, but I do see a lot of, I guess, I hate the term influencer. I do see a lot of influencers doing all of these things still to this day.
So let's put a pin in that. I have a question. Why do you hate the term influencer? Because I used to feel the same way, but I'm interested to knowing why you feel that way.
Yeah, I just think it got a bad, I just got a bad rap over time.
I agree.
And yeah. How people view the term influencer. Technically, by definition, I guess we are influencers because we are influencing people's purchase decisions and their style decisions. And
there's
just a better term for it, you know? I don't consider myself an influencer personally. I run my business, you know?
Period. I understand. Yes. You are an entrepreneur, and that's very bad.
I'm creative director, I'm a writer, yes. Like a digital creator. I like doing creative work. It's just, it's got a bad rap, but I get why people still use it, just because it explains exactly what we're doing here, I guess.
Right. No, I 100%, like you and I are seeing eye to eye on the same thing. It was a while.
How do you feel about it?
It was a while I was like, I'm not an influencer. I don't influence anybody to do anything. I am my own person. People are their own people. And that's just it. But it got to a point where people started like messaging me and DMing me. Like, what do you think about this? Do you like this? I saw you post this brand. Like, do you really like it? So, you know, I realized that I was influencing people to either make purchases or to consider making purchases or to consider watching movies or whatever. I understood that, you know, my job was bigger than what I was kind of making it seem. So, I mean, I'll use the term influencer for myself when I'm speaking to like a group of people, just because everyone kind of understands what that is. But to my heart, to my core, I agree with you. I'm not a big fan of the term influencer. I kind of just stick to like, I'm an Instagram blogger, because post a picture, and then I'll write like a caption based off of the photo or what I was feeling or what I'm encountering during the time. And I feel like that's what blogging is. It's like you just sharing your opinion, your moment, your time with a group of people. And if they're interested in it, then it's like, oh, that blogger just introduced me to that. It's not really like they influenced me to do it, you know? So I definitely, I feel you. I just wanted to get kind of like your perspective on it. Because I don't hear a lot of people who outwardly acknowledge, like, you know, I don't like the term influencer. And I thought I was weird for a long time. Because I was like, I don't like that term.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not crazy. You just helped me understand that I'm not crazy.
Yeah, technically we are influencers, but, you know, I, like you said, I consider myself a blogger, a YouTuber, above all those things, a digital creator. You know, I love creating things.
That's right.
So that I do those things. And if they want to call me an influencer, sure, I help influence people's decisions. But ultimately, it's, you know, I run a business.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. I love that. Okay, so we've talked about a number of things. I feel like I keep saying
that. Let me see. I think I have a couple more things on that.
Oh, please. The floor is yours.
When you've been. Okay, so. All right, so yeah, this is for like the bloggers out there. So over time, as you start gaining traction with your blog and start getting a lot of traffic, you're going to get a lot of outreach. And so brands are going to be reaching out to you to basically pay you an exchange for a website or to one of their like partners, I guess, where they get paid to place these links. And so they're going to propose like maybe writing a guest article for you with an outbound, like with a ton of outbound links to like these random sites, but it could be like influential sites, like a Forbes or like a Business Insider. Mm-hmm. Those brands, they're paying these brands to write and place links for them. Mm-hmm. So in blogging, so basically when you're linking to other, when you place an outbound link, it's basically like you're giving them link juice. So it's like a recommendation, or like you're basically saying that this is legit. And so it gives that the place where you're linking to more authority. And brands pay money to basically get their links placed on other authoritative websites.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is something that like Google looks down upon. It's like a shady building tactic, and so like this is something that you need to avoid if you're a blogger. Like, stay away from it. Even brands, they're gonna pay, though. They'll say we'll pay you, you know, hundreds of dollars just to place these random link into a blog post. But it's like called a black hat technique, where it's not legal. So I would say avoid that if you are a blogger.
So wait, so just to clarify, so are you referring to a company reaches out to you and like is like, hey, we want you to link us into your blog post, and you can say our name and then link our name.
Yeah.
Or if we're talking about a car service, and I might not necessarily name the car service, but literally the words car service, and I link that to you guys. Are you saying that's part of what you're saying, like not to do, like Google doesn't like, or are you saying like it's something totally different?
So they're a car company, you're saying, or like
they
want to place a link to their website, and it's basically under the alt text of car service.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be something that would be frowned upon, especially if it's not disclosed that it's like a paid thing. Like a lot of bloggers do this. It's part of their monetization strategy, and where they do take paid links. And unfortunately, it's a very shady thing, because a lot of people don't disclose that these are paid links.
Right.
And even if you do, it's just something that I wouldn't do. I wouldn't, like, if it's going to be like a paid sponsorship, sure, we can disclose that it's a paid partnership, but it has to be like a more of a organic thing, not like, you paid me and I'm just going to place this link for you.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that is something that there's a lot of bloggers doing that still till this day. It used to be more rampant back in the day, but still lots of bloggers are still doing this, and it's something I avoid. If you're talking about authenticity, like, sure, it might be alluring, right?
No,
it's easy money, right? Like, okay,
literally, yeah.
several hundred dollars just to place a link. That's all I got.
Right. No, but no. You're hitting the nail on the head. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, there are plenty of people, myself included. I've had companies come to me and was like, I'll pay you X amount of dollars if you just post me on your like blog or on your Instagram page. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you don't have to say much about me. Just mention my business and that's it. And it's like,
I
don't know anything about your business. I've never used your business, you know? So I absolutely get it. Like, I get it.
Like they don't do their homework. It's like they don't, you kind of like have to develop a relationship with someone before you
absolutely
do something like that. It's like, oh, all you got to do is wear a t-shirt in your YouTube video with our logo on your
site.
It's like, no.
Right. And and the numbers aren't like flimsy. They're very tempting. But I feel like that's a tactic that they use on purpose to get people to do it, you know? So it's very important, I think, for those who are trying to get into the blogger game or the content creator game or YouTube game or whatever the case may be, that you kind of, that you do your homework, because people are following you and relying on you to provide them with quality content, you know? So
yes, definitely.
I digress.
And then to piggyback on that as well, it's like another thing that brands tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask you for a paid review, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like we already know, like it's just a contradictory thing. It's like you can't have a paid review.
Absolutely.
You can't be 100%. When I do reviews, it has to be a brand that I know and love, or something that I've used and have experience using.
Right.
Where I can write like 100% honest, unbiased. It has to be unbiased as possible, but if it's paid, how can you be, unbiased?
Absolutely. That part.
Yeah. So brands are always reaching out and asking for ways that we can potentially partner together, and they want a review. I'm like, sorry, I don't do paid reviews, but, you can send some product over. I can't guarantee coverage. However, if it is a brand that, ends up being a good fit for me and my audience, then we can talk about potentially partnering, or there's a chance that it will end up being featured organically in the future. Like that's
absolutely
what I say.
Absolutely. I feel like that's like you hit the nail right on the head. Absolutely. There's no way that you can honestly give feedback, critique, or whatever the case may be when you're paid for a product, unless they're on the tip of, we're going to send this to you and we don't want any feedback, any post. We don't want literally, we just want you to try it. And if you like it, then hit us back and we can work on something. Or if you like it, then please post us or whatever the case may be. Like, and I feel like I get more of that from smaller businesses.
Yeah.
Then kind of like the larger business, like well-known businesses. I don't know. Has that been the same for you or?
Agreed. I agree. Because the smaller brands have less of a budget and they're just looking for that coverage. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And larger brands are willing to send out gifted product and they don't even realize they sent you product most of the time.
Yeah. No, that's definitely real. This is kind of like off topic, but kind of on topic still. But how do you feel about people? Okay, so say a small business comes to you and they're like, hey, we only have this much in our budget. And the budget that they send to you or the budget that they have to work with you is lesser than what you kind of like, you kind of want for yourself. It's lesser than what you have worked towards getting. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay. So how do you approach brands like that?
Okay. And this is a brand that reached out to you, or is it a brand that you personally
nope, work with? Specifically brands that reach out to you.
Okay. Yeah. That's first, if it's a brand that I really I'm digging. Like it's a brand that I could potentially see myself working with, and maybe it's something that I would. Well, okay. So first off, I usually have my set rates, and so I never kind of deviate from that. There will be times where I might, if we're doing like a bundled deal where it's kind of like a blog post, a YouTube video, it's kind of like a combination of all different things, like an Instagram post, and it's kind of putting all of them together, then I might offer like a discounted rate if they purchase this. But then again, it's like they're a smaller brand, they can't afford that. So I typically say that it's not a good fit at this time, and potentially, and then they understand and they say that maybe we can keep in touch to potentially work together in the future if their budget allows, kind of thing. But for me, it's I kind of am willing to walk away just because there are so many brands to potentially work with, and I have my rates, so I don't ever kind of I'll never devalue what I'm worth, like ever. So.
When it comes to marketing, I have learned that a lot of companies come to influencers because we're cheaper than having to go through a marketing agency, right? So, not saying that that's a pitfall on the influencer's behalf. That's not what I'm saying. If anything, it's an amazing opportunity for you to gain more income. However, you still should not sell yourself short because of that, you know, because you're not a marketing agency, because you don't have overhead charges and you're not paying employees or whatever the case may be. But, you know, understanding and knowing your worth and your value is still very important. And not only is that knowing that important, but knowing how it affects other people in your same industry is very important. Because if a gang of you are doing promotions and you know you're doing stories and things like that for free or just for product, it affects those who are doing the same thing but have been doing it longer than you or whatever the case may be. It affects them negatively. If anything, you should want to do the same thing. Like you should be asking these companies, like, no, I need money for what I'm doing, or I need whatever you need. So that was a long tangent, but I just throw
Oh,
that.
yeah, I feel you. You're definitely you hit the nail on the head there too.
I am
Completely
there now.
agree. Like it, if people are kind of accepting to do work for free, and kind of like the no spec work, like spec work in design. When I was in design, there were these like sites where it's like Fiverr, some like something like Fiverr, where like a logo is not worth $5. You know, those are worth like thousands of dollars, but are devaluing the work, right? I'm a professional, and we are professionals. Like,
That's
no
right.
doubt about it. Like, you need
That's
to approach it as a business, and you are a professional, and you need to get paid as a professional. And so,
Absolutely.
it's
No, like
time to do our work.
100%. 100%. You know, no, like, listen, I could go on for hours about this.
Oh,
And I'm
yeah.
gonna
Talk to
try to
me about
like I'm gonna try to like
it. Me too.
hone it in a bit. But no, like you hit on this the head. Like I respect people who use like what is it's like Fiverr or whatever. I respect people who
Fiverr.
do that, yeah, because it's like you're literally just trying to make your dream come alive. Like I get it. But half of you guys on that app do amazing work. And I'm telling you now, if you're listening to this, you need to up your prices. Period. Because again, you guys do phenomenal work and you don't charge a lot for it. And I feel like, and in me personally, I felt like I was in the same boat. I feel like when I started blogging and YouTubing and stuff, like I wasn't charging people what I needed to charge people. I remember the first and last time anyone had to tell me anything, I remember I was talking to my beautiful sister. I love her so much. She's in like the beauty community. She is an esthetician. And she was telling me, she was like, yeah, I have this one client who is a blogger. She hasn't been blogging for long, but a company paid her $1,000 for one TikTok video. Excuse me? When she told me that, I was like, what? I need to up my charges, because I was not charging $1,000 for a TikTok or a real video. But like, there are people out there who are charging that, getting paid for that, and they have less followers than both you and I combined. You and I separately, Koi. Like, so I was like, okay, I'm doing something wrong. You know, I need to number one, understand what I'm worth, and I need to charge accordingly and not waver on that. Unless I truly believe in that business, or if the price is just too low, like you said, just, you know, maybe this isn't the right time to connect and leave that door open for future connections.
Right. Or offer them like alternatives that we
can, right.
Like a shorter integration in a YouTube video, maybe like a 20-second mention, a mid-roll or something like that, like shorter, something that they might be able to afford.
Yeah, no, like, listen, I don't know who's listening to this, but I'm getting my life just talking to you about this type of stuff, because it's putting so many things into perspective, and it's letting me know some things I need to go back to the drawing board, because I'm gonna be very transparent. I'm a sucker. If I really, really like the brand, a lot of times I would like sell myself short just to work with the brand, and because my mindset was like, oh, working with this brand would get me further in my career, kind of.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell anyone who's listening, that is not true. Do not follow what I did. I'm not doing that now, but in the beginning when I was doing it, I basically just played myself. I played myself because no one cares really who you have worked with. No one cares really about the brands. All they care about is, can you make me money?
Yep.
If you can, let's work. If you can't, then the big brands will just drop you like with no problem at all. And they'll find the next influencer or a blogger or whatever, YouTuber or whatever, you know? Yep. So
I feel you. Like,
yeah, okay.
In the beginning, it's like you do want to treat it like a business, even in the beginning. And it's like, if you love a brand, like, sure, you can do work for them for free. Like, especially early on, if you love a brand, like, you're going to be featuring them all the time because you just love them. And that's completely fine. But over time, it's like you need to treat it as a business and get paid accordingly.
That's right.
Don't be afraid for that moonshot. Like, don't be afraid to ask for something that you even feel like you should be asking for money that you're uncomfortable with.
Absolutely.
You feel like they're going to say no, but you'd be surprised at what people would say yes to. The worst thing is you say something and then they agree with it like in a split second, like, oh, yes. Like, and you're like, ah, damn.
No.
Money that I leave on the table. You know? So you want to like take that moonshot and like reach for the stars, because you never know what brand is willing to pay. And
that's it.
They got budgets, like they got money. They're lying to you if they say they don't. It's just like we're being real here. Like, like you know how the game works. Like, I'm just saying that's how I feel about it.
No lies were told in all that you said. That was it. You said it. That was. I don't know. I feel like we kind of touched on it, but I wanted to also kind of talk to you about like best tips and strategy for monetizing your work.
Alrighty, you guys. I am here to sadly say I am putting a pin in this conversation. We will be back next week to wrap everything up and finish out the business of blogging. We want you guys to know so much more, but we don't want to overload you with information. So make sure you guys are following me at The Fashion Analyst, just so that you guys are in the know of what's going on. If you haven't already, make sure you check out Koi's Instagram at The Gent Within. That's THEGENT Within, WITHIN. All right. And make sure you subscribe to the Fashion Analyst Podcast so you don't miss the next episode, because we're going to be getting more so into how to break into this industry and how to really monetize your blog. And we're going to talk more about the do's and don'ts of blogging. So if this is what excites you, 2022 is your year of actually getting started on your blog and starting your business, whether it be on Instagram or creating your own website, definitely stay tuned. We have so much more to share with you guys. So again, thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week. All right, you guys. Bye.